talking to my people, yeah. Your life running like a red disease, running like a red disease.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything that on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying: conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe, Ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi, Hotep family. Hope everything is well with you today. Hope you had a good weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things that you wanted to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. Hoping, too, the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But, of course, if it was not and it had to get done, it must get done, you got it done. Sorry about that, family. Had a little technical difficulty that we have corrected, and let's get back to where we were, okay? Yeah, this is African Perspectives. This program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast programs. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that. There will be programs that are dated and titled. Thanks to my good brother and friend, Brother Kwaku. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening. Once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And all times are going to give our Eastern times. The program on Monday and Wednesdays, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., Our Story with Baba Wes Johnson and Brother Johnny from New Orleans. On Mondays and Wednesdays, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., Our Story with Baba Wes Johnson and Brother Johnny out of New Orleans. Thursday, from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., the Black Liberation Movement with Brother Patrick Lumumba of the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club. From 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Thursday. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening, family. Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Sunday, from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. on Sunday, it's Pinckney to Pinckney. Activist Reverend Edward Pinckney from Benton Harbor, Michigan. And then on Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. The Inyasa Sim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. This is Brother Baba Mwali Mubarudi's Daily Thought. Outstanding. Okay. June 29th. If your part of the battlefield is covered with thorns, you do not leave your position and go to stand where the ground is good. African proverb. What differentiates warriors from others is their virtuous, resilient character. The priority of upholding our tradition and claiming our ancestors' respect placed them in the inevitable position of constantly being uncompromising in the actualization of their vision and mission. While tactics may vary, the place, time, and others, instances do not affect those admirable qualities. Still, the warrior's character requires time to mature, to develop a deep, extensive root system, a stout, strong trunk, and powerful reaching branches. In situations of risk, developing warriors are courted with compromised role options. In less risky situations, there is no need for enemies to make these offers because in them, a warrior's role is non-threatening. Those who do not see that they are at war do not have to be kept from it. Without exception, social norms in Western society naturally define the role of the conscious. Sworn African warrior are deviant. A warrior couple are even more so. Any real form of African manhood and womanhood are feared and defined as an abomination in a society determined to reduce the African to an unwelcome memory. In this social cultural context, whatever role African men and women play that reveals an unyielding homage to their traditions and people places them in a diametrically oppositional conflict with their prescribed roles as powerless, subdued males and females. Affirm, regardless of the terrain, I stand my ground. Affirm, regardless of the terrain, I stand my ground. June 30th. White studies is a system of intellectual legitimacy which defines the activities and experiences of white Western people as the universal yardstick of human existence. Show dude on it. James Turner. Those Africans reaching out to be saved from the entanglement of the underbrush of Eurasians, still fighting off the venomous white predators with sworn, dyed, ineffective twigs, while holding on to a cutting thorn, vines for dear life against the sucking quicksand of alien seduction with broken and bloodied hands, deserve every chance we can offer to assist them because that self they know they must be in order to regain their sanity. Ashe. Affirm, I assist my African brothers and sisters who desire to be sane. Affirm, I assist my African brothers and sisters who desire to be sane. Brothers and sisters, the Inya Sasim of daily revolutionary thought. Hey, family, it's good to see Baba Butch back in the mix. Haven't seen him in a while, man. It's good to see you, my brother. Yes, sir. This is African and American African History Month, June. This is the last day of June. So, you know, we're going to pay homage. We're going to talk about it. I got my good brother Muhammad Abdullah with us. But I'm going to pay a little intro to what's happening, what we're trying to do today, what we're going to discuss today. Yeah. Because it's important that we know how, I give a introduction that talks about all the things that we did. And of course, music is right up there. And we created everything. We're the first people, damn it. Come on. You know? Yeah. We're the first people. So, my brothers and sisters, the OJs.
Brothers and sisters, the OJs, I'm telling you, I love it. I love it. Oh, boy. All right, let's get back to what we're talking about today. I'm sorry for these technical difficulties, but we got it together. That's right. We're on the one, and I'm going to introduce my guest for today, who's been on this program many times, giving out all kinds of good information. And that's Brother Muhammad Abdullah. Brother Muhammad, how are you?
I'm good, Oshie. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you, man. I am too. I'm doing well. Yeah. I appreciate you as always. Yeah. Man, go ahead.
I appreciate you as well, Oshie. And I want to thank you and your cohort and all of your listening audience for allowing me to engage in this discussion today about music.
Yeah, yeah.
And we know that this is June 30th.
Right, the last day.
Black Music Month.
Yeah.
The last day of Black Music Month. And I think we reminded each other the other day that, wow, June is Black Music Month. June only has 30 days. They shorten us again. February, after American History Month, 29 days.
Yeah.
So they stuck Black Music Month in June, but we'll take it.
We'll take it.
We've been doing it for a long time. And Oshie, what I really want to thank you for is, and the reason why I asked you if you would be willing to have this discussion about whether music is haram, prohibited, or halal, permissible for Muslims to listen to, including hip-hop, which we know for many African Americans, hip-hop was the lens or the sound through which they were introduced to Islam through young
sure.
brothers in New York.
Sure.
Some of them 5%ers.
Yeah.
But who in hip-hop, You would hear these assalamu alaikum, different you know, words about you know from Islamic faith, and so the other reason why I was asked you to be willing to have this discussion is because not many people are aware of the controversy in Sunni Islam with regards to music. And, you know, like many things when it comes to Islam, many people get misinformation through the media or otherwise. But also a lot of Muslims are not aware that this controversy exists. Some have been listening to music all their life, like mm-hmm. me, and continue to listen to music. Some brothers are very strict, and they don't listen to music. I don't know how they get around it, because some of the same people that say that Islam prohibits listening to music and we can discuss some of the reasons why or some of the reasons they say that it is, many of those people watch movies. So unless you're going back to Charlie Chaplin's time,
when
the Caucasian people, you know, invented movies, came up with movies. I won't say they invented, but they came up with movies, and it had no sound.
Right.
They just sit there looking at the screen. So, but back, you know, going back to that particular time, which is when Islam really began to be introduced in the United States, it was pretty much through African Americans. And so music is a big part of our lives. Those of us who grew up during the era of Motown in the 50s and 60s, we say Motown was a soundtrack of our lives.
Yes, it is.
And so it's a good part of our history. Jazz music, which came from the souls of African Americans, was introduced to America and became an American institution. And Duke Ellington, one of the godfathers of jazz, one of the greatest composers in American
composer in
history.
The world. Yes.
Yeah, in world history. Mm-hmm. Yes, in world history. And we know jazz was a jazz music. African American musicians were part of the vanguard during the fight for civil and human rights going back to the 30s because musicians were denied and discriminated against the same as regular folks. We know the history of people like Duke Ellington and Louis Armstrong, who were jazz musicians back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, and played in venues, hotels they couldn't
segregated.
Stay in.
They couldn't stay in. Yep.
Played in hotels or places where they couldn't go up to the bar and get a drink.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very, very, you know, complex history. Relationship with music in the country, and of course, you know, before we were brought here, we had in our souls a music that came from the ground from which we originated in Africa. So I just think it's a subject worth, and I'd ask Oshie, a brother who is very knowledgeable brother in Islam, and who would probably take the position on the side of music is prohibited for Muslims to listen to, but he declined or didn't respond. So I'll discuss the issues, but right now I'm in the middle when it comes to that discussion.
Mm-hmm.
of music, halal or haram for Muslims.
Well, for me, in terms of a religious belief, having to restrict you, they have done that for decades, centuries. A religious belief sends out a dictum, an edict, and this is it. You don't do this. You don't do that. You know, and for those who want to follow that, that's what they do or don't do, you know. But our music has been around from the very beginning of time. You know, we are creators of music. You know, we create song, we create sound, we create instruments, you know. And probably the most important of those things is the drum. The drum was very vital for our existence as a people, and even through our captivity, the drum, you know, and even the songs that we sang during our captivity, especially here, you know, Steal Away, you know,
yes,
Wade in the Water.
Paul Mooney,
go ahead.
Paul Mooney said that they prevented us from using the drum. Because that was the way music is, following up on the message of the OJs, message in our music. Music is a form of communication.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said when they banned us from using the drum, you know, during and post-slavery, he said they thought they had us, but we invented tap dance and entertainment. He said, no, that was a form of communication.
Kitchen was well, yes.
He's tapping, and I'm meet Harriet Tubman tomorrow at 10 a.m.
You tap that out.
so we learn how to improvise.
Yes,
and
oh, yeah.
That is one of the true definitions of jazz music.
Improvisation.
Improvisation.
Yes.
And as Wynton Marsalis said in the Ken Burns jazz series, that in order to deal with what we dealt with when we came here, you had to know how to improvise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you living you're eating food that you're not accustomed to. You're totally removed from your environment. And so, improvisation is a feature of our culture, no doubt.
Well, that's the important thing that we must recognize and understand, that all the genres of music come from us. All. I sent you a piece that my lady sent to me, you know, saying that all the music came out of us. Blues, of course, you know, that's like this. What is that? That saying goes, they want our rhythm, but they don't want our blues. Speaking to the Caucasian, they want our rhythm, and they sure do. Because believe me, if it were not for us, Brother Muhammad, if it were not for us, think of the music that these people would be playing. If it was not for us, I know it's funny as hell because it's deep, because it's sad. It's some that, you know, they had no life, they had no rhythm, they had no feel, you know. Yeah, if it were not for us. So, you know, yeah, they want our rhythm, but they don't want our blues. Jazz.
So,
rock and roll.
I'm gonna share something with you that came from an individual that most of the people, when I say his name, are not going to know who this individual is. He was born and raised in present day Egypt, Kemet, and came to the United States back in the early 50s. And his name was Sayed Qutb.
And, say it again.
He ended up.
Say his name again.
Sayed Qutb was his name.
Okay.
And he met his demise. I think I mentioned to you in a previous conversation. He was sentenced to death in Egypt after he returned to from the United States by Jamal Nasser.
Nasser put him to death.
Nasser hung him. Yeah, because Sayed Qutb is one of the icons of the Muslim Brotherhood.
Oh, okay.
Started in Egypt.
Yeah,
and
Muslim Brotherhood.
The Muslim Brotherhood started in Egypt, very, very radical, extreme version of Islam, and spread, particularly when Nasser came into power, spread. Many of the individuals left, went to Syria, Saudi Arabia, Jordan. And so they spread, and even here to the United States. And many people, and I don't want to go too far off the subject in that direction, but many people, and when I say his name, unless you were born yesterday and stayed up all night, you'll know who he is, Osama bin Laden. A lot of people think that Osama bin Laden was influenced, radicalized by the beliefs or practices in Saudi Arabia. No, Osama bin Laden and many more young Saudis were radicalized by some of the members of the Egyptian Brotherhood who fled Egypt and began to work in the elementary, middle, high school, college in Saudi Arabia. And so they had access to these young individuals and presented this extremism program. But the statement that I'm going to mention came from Sayed Qutb, and this is what he said about jazz music after visiting America in the 1950s. The African American's enjoyment of jazz does not fully begin until he couples it with singing like crude screaming, Qutb wrote when he returned to Egypt. It is this music that the savage Bushmen created to satisfy their primitive desires.
Mm.
So here's an individual coming here to the United States from Egypt, modern present-day Egypt, in the 1950s. And this is his view of us as African-Americans.
Mm.
So when individuals who take the position that music is haram for Muslims, and I understand, I'll acknowledge some of the aspects of music which, you know, in some respect are negative, in some case destructive, but here's an individual coming from someplace else and viewing us in America and seeing us as savage. And in 1952, we hadn't gained a lot of civil and human rights, but, you know, savage, come on. So that's where some of the controversy comes to me, because, okay, why would you expect an individual to take the view or support the view you saying music is haram? And here's an individual that is identified. If you go to most masjids in the United States and places around the world, they know who Sayyid Qutb is.
Mm-hmm.
But for him to make this statement, basically he's reflecting the mentality of the people, because he also found objectionable when he came here the lewd and the lascivious behavior of American women, particularly because he went to Colorado and he went to California, visited California. So he mainly is looking. If you really want to know who the savages are in this country, follow a Caucasian boy home, and mm-hmm. you'll find out.
Yeah.
So, but to lay that on us just shows.
Yeah. That's the thing. That's the whole problem. Thing. No, that's the whole thing. That no, the European is the savage, and I can go throughout his history, but I don't want to do that because I want to keep it to the point of where we're discussing music. And
when's the last time you ate some raw meat, Oshie?
Oh man, I'll be honest with you, man. I ain't lying. I ate some raw hamburger way back. I'm talking about back in the 70s, early 70s, man. Because we went to a party and they had raw beef and onions on rye bread, and I ate the stuff and I was like,
I saw it in about around 1973. Mm-hmm. When I was a member of the Nation of Islam under Elijah Muhammad, and we were invited to speak at an event that was held in the stadium at Rufus King High School.
Mm.
And when the festivities or, you know, the program, some part of it was over and we went to eat, that was the first time I ever saw some raw ground beef on a piece of bread, like you said, with raw onions on top of it.
Yes. Raw beef and onions.
And man, at that particular time, it just confirmed everything that the theology of the Nation of Islam, because, here these so-called white devils, you know, who came out of the caves and hillsides of Europe, which was the narrative, eating raw meat in the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
So, certainly we know who the savages are.
Yeah.
But here's another aspect of the you know, I'm playing a little devil's advocate here, Oshie. Is one of the reasons why Islam says that playing music and individuals who play music generally who become artists, and if you look at America, they become icons. They become, what's the name of that show on TV that produced Reuben Studdard?
Oh, America's Got Talent.
Jennifer Hudson.
Yeah, America's Got Talent. Well,
the main one was American Idol.
American Idol.
American Idol.
Right, that's American Idol.
So one of the...
Which, of course, the forerunner was Star Search.
Star Search.
The forerunner was Star Search. So go ahead.
And it spread to where America's Got Talent, you know, a lot of different shows.
Mm-hmm.
That is kind of how America expands its arts and music. But clearly, when you talk about, when you look at some of the lifestyles of the people, if I name some of our favorite artists and you look at their lifestyle and their demise, that's sort of part of the argument that Islam comes from is one, idols worshiping, and some people, you know, not only are fans of these, some of these individuals, they are idols. If you've ever seen how particularly European Caucasians responded to Michael Jackson, fainting, passing out. Oh, Michael, boom.
Yeah, they did the same thing for Elvis Presley as well. But, yeah, go ahead.
Elvis Presley, mm-hmm. across the board.
Mm-hmm.
But then if you look at the lives of some of the people who have engaged in the entertainment field, particularly music, Prince, Michael Jackson, Charlie Parker, A lot of them
drugs.
The part of the lifestyle of the music became using these substances, living this lifestyle that took its toll on people. Mm-hmm. Particularly when you talk about the jazz history, you cannot escape the feature of when Italian organized crime dumped heroin into the African American community in the 40s, 50s, 60s, mm-hmm. 70s. A lot of the jazz musicians in particular got caught up with that. Some individuals, particularly like Charlie Bird Parker, who was a genius of music, but he was addicted to heroin, and his influence was so broad that other musicians became heroin addicts because they thought it would help them to play like Bird.
Mm.
that's from, you know, the common, kind of common knowledge, but I heard it spoken, the alto saxophone player, Jackie McLean, said that when people said that he sounded like Bird, he said, that's the way I wanted to sound. And he, you know, he picked up that needle and put it in his arm because he thought it would make it more like Bird.
Well, that's the same thing. That's the same thing as Robert Johnson. Robert Johnson was believed to couldn't play a note, but he wanted to be. So he walked down that road. That's pretty an emphasis on the movie Sinners, because he walked down that road and met the devil, and he cut a deal with the devil. You know that if the devil would give him the ability to play and sing and so forth, you know. There you have my soul. And of course, he didn't, I think what he died in his 38, 39 years old. But when he came on the scene like that, after supposedly having sold his soul, he was killing. Robert Johnson was killing, you know?
Mm.
And so I don't know about that. Let me say this. I don't know about that, but I know there's been some very, very talented brothers and sisters coming up in the music and in different genres and just, you know, being more better than anybody else in those genres. You know, no matter what it was, a classical, whether it was contemporary, was it pop, was it R&B, was it a country western, whatever it is, you know, we began, if we got into it and worked hard enough in it and so forth and dedicated to it, we excel. You know,
well, as Paul Mooney said, if we get in, we take over.
That's
when you talk about the arts, the sport, whatever it is,
we take
know,
over.
That old story, you know, the one that you try to push down and hold back, they're going to eventually rise to the top. They're going to become the cream.
Yeah.
And then almost every genre of music that we became involved in after first being denied, because we, as we know, it became part of American law. Settled law. After Plessy versus Ferguson, the Supreme Court case, upheld treating us as second class citizens, it kept us out of everything, anything that would integrate sports, arts, education. They established legal segregation and held it for probably post-slavery, almost 100 years before the 60s when it was let up.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly, whatever we stepped into, and not with the intentions of taking over, just intentions of being a part.
Right.
A member of society.
We just rise
making, to the top. Making them live up to the creed that they established.
That's right.
Even though it didn't include us when it was written, that all human beings are
created equal
and so forth. But legally, we as African American, Indigenous Americans of African descent, are the only people who have a history and a legacy of being free in a country that had declared all men were created equal and free.
Well, Muhammad, the reality of that statement in itself, that we know, the cracker couldn't say all white men are created equal. So he had to put all men are created equal. But the general knowledge and understanding, period, because the Dred Scott decision, you know, spelt that out, When the Dred Scott decision, upheld. Justice Taney says, you know, it was upheld. He said that African people, black people, have no rights that white people are bound to respect. You ain't even part of this, you know?
And that introduced what they call the Three-Fifths Compromise,
mm-hmm.
Which was interpreted as being we were only three-fifths of a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And wow, the nerve, the very nerve of another human being to utter something like that in regards to another human being is just sinister and evil in and of itself.
Exactly.
But clearly, exactly. once we took over, and very often, we started off with the crudest of methods of playing this music, but we perfected it.
Yeah.
When jazz music was created in New Orleans by King Oliver,
Buddy Bolden, and Sidney Boucher.
Yes.
And Sidney Boucher.
It became something that no one had ever heard this music mm-hmm. played this way before, and that continued all the way up to Charlie Parker, who invented him and Dizzy Gillespie invented this
Bebop.
Style of playing the music
mm-hmm.
That was different. It had a different way. It had swing, and as Duke Ellington say, if it don't have swing,
it don't mean a thing. That's right, don't mean a thing.
It was a soloist art, so individuals had an opportunity to shine. That wasn't part of the European cultural paradigm of playing music,
mm-hmm. or,
you know, orchestra. Nobody does anything individual. No individual expression. We changed all of that when the music was invented. And eventually, Oshie, a lot of the jazz musicians, not all, but a considerable number of jazz musicians, particularly in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, converted to Islam. It was
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. the Ahmadi, most of it was Ahmadi.
Is that Islam, right? Like Ishrish Muhammad and them cats and Yusef Lateef?
Not Ishrish Muhammad, but particularly Yusef Lateef,
mm-hmm.
Ahmed Jamal,
mm-hmm.
Dakota Staton, the singer. There were a few others, but it was, like I say, it was mainly this version of Islam, Ahmadi, that was born in India and came to the United States. And one of the things about Ahmadiyyism that was attractive to some African Americans was it was probably some, in the 50s and 60s, it was some of the integration that occurred. I used to kind of joke in Milwaukee in the 60s and 70s when Ahmadis started to catch on. Most of them brothers would marry these 300-400 pound Caucasian women.
Is that right?
I was like, man. Yeah, they would have these big Caucasian women that would convert to the religion. But again, Ahmadiyyism was kind of an offshoot. But it some of the musicians, another one, Art Blakey.
Art Blakey. Who's Muslim?
Yeah, the drummer Art Blakey and the
jazz messengers. Yes, sir.
Art Blakey converted to Ahmadi Islam. Okay. And so there were a number of you. The other brother you mentioned, Idris Muhammad, he came along in the 70s. When, you know, more in 65, when immigrants were from Asia, Africa, the Arabian Peninsula were allowed to come into the United States after the repeal of the Origins Act, that's when Sunni Islam started to come into the United States, mostly through people from India and Pakistan. Eventually, Arabs started to come, people from Africa started to come. And so when you go around the country now, there are large, I mean, the immigrant Muslim community is either equal or surpassed the African American, who for years, decades, were the largest population of Muslims. The other thing, Oshi, is who takes the brunt of the pressure of, I'm speaking from experience, when it comes to music among the African American Muslims, among American Muslims, the African American.
Mm-hmm.
We are the
right.
quickest to
right.
to truncate ourselves or decapitate ourselves, but you find these other groups listening to music. Now, I'm not saying we should necessarily be following their example, but you know, if these individuals, I don't think I've ever walked into a Middle Eastern restaurant and didn't hear music playing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that in the Muslim world, it's not everybody takes on this very strict music is haram position. It's not all, but particularly in the United States, it's mostly African-American Muslims, Sunni Muslims who take this position. And some of the reasons that they take the position, there's no explicit statement in the Quran that says music is prohibited to listen to, but there's a verse that is interpreted as meaning music is like they equate it with idle talk.
Mm.
Idle talk, vainglorious talk. That's an interpretation that there's much difference of opinion about. And I'm going to say this and then I'll, you know, if we have some callers that want to respond, if you want to move the conversation forward. I had the experience in 1996, I think it was, of going to Indianapolis to a Muslim brother's wedding, son's wedding. And so after the wedding that took place in the mosque, we went to a park, to a community center, to have the walima, or what we would call a reception. And so when we came in the building, there was some jazz playing. And so the brother, couple of the brothers came over and said to the Imam, Umar al-Khattab, some of the Arab brothers is complaining about the music. Imam Umar al-Khattab said, go tell that brother to kick some train. He became my friend. We became friends from then on. We've been tight ever since.
Right on. I
just thought, you know, okay, because a lot of times you don't have African-Americans, and I won't call any names because you know some of these people from being on the fire department with them, but they sort of step back. Muhammad Abdullah is not stepping back for anybody unless you bring some truth or bring something to establish the position you've taken, because I've been studying this deen for Islam for a long time. I don't say I know it all. I'm not the best Muslim, but you know I'm not going to stand still for you to step on my toes.
Right? No,
I know how to dance.
Well, you know you're
I know how to dance. I grew up dancing.
Well, you're my
authority. I'm on. Absolutely.
So, but in a minute we're going to take a break and we're going to play Message in Our Music by the OJs as well. And because this is African and American African Music Month.
I love the cover of that album.
I do too. The brothers paying djembes. Yes. It's beautiful.
Let me say this. There's a song by Chaka Khan called Ain't Nobody.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite songs by her.
Yes.
And
love you better than me. Ain't nobody gonna love you.
When it comes to the OJs, ain't nobody like Eddie LaVert. And I loved all the OJs, but like Paul Williams was with the Temptations, Eddie LaVert was the heart and soul of the OJs.
Yes,
I had a chance to talk to him once when he was on he was in Milwaukee and on Eric Vaughn's show.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a chance to ask him a couple of questions. But from the beginning when I first heard the OJs, 1966, there were two pieces, Look Over Your Shoulder and... Man, I can't think of the other.
Well, you got it before me because my introduction to the OJs was when I was trying to go up into Rands and other clubs, even though I was only, you know, 19 years old. You had to be 21 back then, you know, was Money, Money, Money. Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I was with Jimbo Turan yesterday, and Jimbo Turan. I hadn't seen him in a long time, I was telling him that when I first met his sister,
Sandy
Turan,
Sandy, beautiful
sister, we were
about
15, 16,
okay,
and she would invite us over to their house on 4th and Locust, upstairs from Turan's.
Right, exactly.
I was upstairs in your house when I was 16, and 2 years later when I was 18, I was downstairs in the bar. I had a good time talking with Jimbo Turan.
Right on.
He's an interesting character.
Yes, man. Yes, he is. I tell you. And you know, I fell in love with our music from the jump. Fortunately, in me coming up, We always had a radio, and we always had a black and white TV, except for a couple of years where TV went out. We couldn't afford one, you know, and so we were down. But I remember some great – I remember Nat King Cole having his program.
Oh, yeah.
In the late 50s.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, after, I think Nat King Cole was the first African-American artist, entertainer, with his own show yeah. on national TV.
Yes, he was.
That was a pioneer,
yeah.
Groundbreaker, forerunner, no doubt.
Yep. Didn't last long. You know, it didn't last long. Then Cracker wasn't going to keep that up too long. I think he almost just like Richard Pryor. Richard Pryor lasted four shows, and I think that's how long Nat King Cole's program was on the air.
Well, with Nat King Cole, I don't know what the situation was as far as drinking, but he definitely smoked cigarettes. And one of the saddest things looking at back over our history, particularly jazz history,
yeah.
almost every photograph you see an artist
smoking a cigarette,
of an artist,
yeah.
they got a cigarette in their hand or in their mouth.
Yeah, blowing a horn, smoking a cigarette, man. Yeah.
Singing, dancing. Billie Holiday.
Mm-hmm.
You almost never have them. In fact, it was almost like a badge of honor because the people who produced cigarettes and the medical profession lied for decades
for sure.
about the danger of nicotine and tobacco.
Yeah. In fact, they were promoting cigarettes. They promoted Camel cigarettes, little small ass cigarettes with no filter, no menthol, harsh as hell. The American Medical Association promoting it. But
two things were strategically placed in movies and television was alcohol, cigarettes, and diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
Those were strategically placed in films and on television to draw people to those things.
Mm-hmm.
The diamonds, saying that they were scarce. Ain't no scarcity. They never been a scarcity.
Never been. When they were mining them in South Africa, because that's where the majority of a lot of diamonds come from, also in Russia, but they strategically hoarded them onto the market to make them think that it was scarce, thereby elevating the price tremendously. You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. In fact, Israel, those European Jews, that's their main thing, diamonds.
Oh, you see, man. There's a documentary, Oshie, I saw on PBS years ago about the, it was like the cartel of diamonds, and it was mostly the
Hasidics.
Oh, man, the Oppenheimers.
Yeah.
There was a number of Jewish Zionist individuals around the world who made, you know, became billionaires, profiting and trafficking in the diamonds. That,
mm-hmm.
You know, they were enslaving people in Africa and other places.
Yeah.
Controlling
the diamond industry. Yeah.
Deep history, no doubt.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, please join me and my good brother, Muhammad Abdullah. And we're going to talk more about, you know, the music that we love, how it evolved, some of the things that we understand about music and its importance in our lives. So, brothers and sisters, you stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Music. Music Network and Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back, family.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. A message in our music, the OJs. Yeah, man, beautiful. My guest today, of course, is Brother Muhammad Abdullah, and we're talking about music. This is the last day of African and American African his Music Month. I label that way because music started in Africa, and many American Africans have perfected different genres of music, going through different genres of music. Our influence is just tremendous. Our influence is tremendous, you know. And so that's what we're talking about. And you can join this conversation by giving us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Brother Muhammad.
Yes, sir. Oh, so ironically, I'm at work. And I work at the Washington Park Senior Center in Washington Park, which, as you know, when we were growing up in Milwaukee, before the dominant people started moving institutions away from us, or where we live, to the suburbs of Wauwatosa. But when we were growing up, the Washington Park was the location of the zoo.
That was the zoo.
And it was in Washington Park that I saw, because they still have a band shell over there.
Right.
They've had concerts over the years.
Sure. I saw Louis Armstrong. I saw Louis Armstrong there, man. I saw Louis Armstrong there. Yes, sir. Me and my mama. Yeah, back in the 60s.
So imagine this, Oshie. Here we are in America. We cut off with few exceptions. There were a few exceptions where in the 20th century, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, we didn't really know, we didn't have many of us a connection with Africa. And in some respects, vice versa. But here comes, and obviously he was listening, this brother from South Africa, Hugh Masekela, who blew the paint off of a horn.
That's right. He blew that trumpet, man.
This young man was in Africa listening to Louis Armstrong and Sidney Bechet, and he came to America, and man, I have some memorable music, and having seen him right here in this park is just something that, man, I really appreciate.
What's interesting, and you know, a lot of times I go on YouTube a lot. In fact, I'm always talking about go to YouTube, you know. And sometimes I see different young artists playing our music. You know, I saw this one called Cajun Kid, young lady, you know, and playing bass. You know, she plucking like Larry Graham, you know. This is an Asian group. I believe it's Korean, more than likely South Korean. You know, they cold. You know, I've even played their music on my program at one time. And I made mention of that. It sounds like us. I didn't want to, you know,
You know, Oshie, there was the same, in the Ken Burns Jazz series, there's a point where after the bebop era, and Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie invented this music that was genius and it was innovative. People were excited about it, but it did something to the genre, because originally jazz music was dance music, but very similar.
Swing.
And I try to have this conversation with young people when it comes to hip hop versus rap. So when Charlie Parker came along, him and Dizzy Gillespie playing this music, it was not music that you could dance to. And so with the heroin and the music style, people stopped dancing. People started going to other venues. And so at one point, a person said, jazz is as dead as Abraham Lincoln. But it came back. It was revived. It came back. And there are still some pioneers who are still around. People like Herbie Hancock, And there's a young man, a keyboard artist, pianist, who I consider the heir apparent to Herbie Hancock. He has the same light, you know, melodic, beautiful touch that Herbie Hancock. His name is Robert Glasper.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a jazz fan, if you don't know already, check out Robert Glasper. He collaborates with some sharp singers. But, yeah, Robert Glasper is one of the new. Another one is this young brother who is a trombone player named Jeff Bradshaw.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, just two names I want to throw out there to let people know. The art isn't dead.
Oh, no, not at all. There's many. I mean, Winter Marcellus is trying to make sure you see to that, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
There's a beautiful sister. Oh, man, I can't remember her name at this very moment. Beautiful voice. She sounds like the women sounded in the 40s and 50s, 60s, singing jazz, you know. And I'm thinking,
you're not talking about Lettucey.
No, not Lettucey. I love her voice.
Yeah.
But no, this is is it now Dade, Sandra, Andrew Day or something like that? If somebody knows out there in our listening audience, please give us a call, give me a call, or just, you know, we got a number of you in the queue. So if you can say that you know this young sister, she's a Grammy Award winning jazz artist, outstanding voice. Sounds just like the sisters back, she sounds like a, and really, seriously, Miss the Divine One, Sarah Vaughan.
Sarah Vaughan.
You know.
That also known as Sassy.
Yeah, Sassy.
she was something else. Oh, let me read something that I stole and is one of my favorite sayings from the Ken Burns jazz series. And I think most people will relate to this, but it's by a writer and a critic, journalist, critic, writer, James T. Maher. And he said, song is the wind chime of memory. And most of us know, if you came up listening to music, you can hear a song and a person that you know or had a relationship with in one way or another will immediately come to mind. That is the experience that I think music holds. But also, on the other side, playing devil's advocate again, one of the things that Muslims are encouraged to do is to memorize the Quran. From children, from the age of children, you have children 9, 10 years old who have memorized the entire Quran. And one of the reasons why some of the scholars in Islam say that music is prohibited is because music takes up space in the heart, which should be reserved for the remembrance and praise of Allah.
Yes.
Alhamdulillah.
Yes.
Do that. But
yes.
I think Allah has created us with big hearts, and so to advocate another side, I think we can have room for the Quran and you can have room for music.
Ashe.
Allah knows best.
Yes, ashe. That's what I'm saying. You know, some people, because of a theology that they've been imposed on them, believe that they can't listen to music, they can't dress this way, they can't do this, that, and the other. Of course, those things have been broken down, and that's not happening as much as it was. I remember being product of the 50s and really growing up in the 60s, you know, the decade you were born in, the following decade is when you really grow up. And so, you know, I remember the sanctified church, you know, you couldn't, man. I mean, like
they call jazz and blues the devil's
music. That's right. It was the devil's music.
And in fact, they have in jazz music, they have a note that it's a real complicated note. But it's called the devil's interval because it stretches and does things with the music that, you know, is not typical of most artists or instrumentalists. But one more, Oshie, I'm going to drop, and then if we want to entertain the callers.
Sure.
So Prophet Muhammad was reported to have said, there will surely be among my nation Muslims who will regard as permissible music, adultery, and fornication, men wearing silk and gambling and intoxicants. We've seen some of that.
Oh, yeah.
We've seen some of that.
Well, that's part of life, and that's part of what's happening. You know, once again, these are temptations. Some people succumb to them. Some those who succumb to them, their lives were ruined. Some people succumb to them and their lives were enhanced. They became more creative. They became, you know, it all depends upon how you deal with it. I remember Teddy's club on Farwell. I think I've mentioned this time before because I talked about Eddie Harris. But Eddie Harris was doing his thing and Jose Feliciano.
That young guy brought so many jazz musicians that were popular at the time that I saw at Teddy's, Freddie Hubbard, Esther Phillips.
I was there. I don't know if I was there when you were there, but I was there as well. Just as you mentioned, I've seen them. In fact, I've seen Rashawn Roland Kurt. You know, and for those who are listening, Rashawn Roland Kurt was a very progressive jazz player. He played multiple instruments.
He was blind, and he would play
20 instruments.
Horns. He would have three or four saxophones around, you know, with the strap around his neck.
Yep.
And he would be blowing. And one of my favorite songs by Rashawn Roland Kurt, which shows the timelessness of music, was he wrote a song in the 60s, I believe it was, called Volunteer Slavery. And it started off.
Volunteer slavery, yeah.
Volunteer slavery. You look today at particularly our community, but, you know, in America in general, people are volunteering to be slaves, man, by the hordes on a daily basis, especially if you live in urban African American environment.
Mm-hmm.
We have young people. We had a situation just last week here in Milwaukee where a young brother ambushed two police officers.
Yeah,
both African Americans.
Yeah, one is dead.
One died.
Yes.
The other one mortally wounded, and he was laying wait for them, lured them in after firing a pistol. And was in the bushes and came up and caught these cats unawares. They never got a shot off before he took, you know, hit both of them. So he has volunteered to be a slave for the rest of his life.
Good. Well, please, good for his ass. Hopefully he gets, I know Wisconsin doesn't have the death penalty, only in the case of Jeffrey Dahmer.
Well, you can have a death sentence and not be executed. Mm-hmm. You just ain't coming home no more.
Yeah, that's it.
That's a death sentence.
Forever.
You have no freedom. You have no freedom. You have no control over anything. According to the 13th Amendment,
mm-hmm.
you are a slave.
Yeah.
You committed a crime. You've been convicted in a court of law. You have volunteered to be a slave
I want to point out something that when I went to hear Rashawn Roland Kurt, just like you, I was at Teddy's consistently around that time. My brother-in-law, Brother Andre Broadnex, he was a musician. He loved
Cannonball. Andre was a neighbor of mine. He lived down the street.
Yes, he did. When y'all live off of Keith. Yep. And he turned me on to jazz. I'm so thankful. And when I went to Teddy's to hear Rashawn Roland Kurt, you know, there was something that he said about, you know, about the music. And what he was referencing is how this so-called smooth jazz, cool jazz by all these Caucasians was being played. You know, like how can Kenny G outsell Najee and Grover Washington and many others combined? When I read that, I was like, damn, you kidding me? Kenny G?
So, Oshie, you know the originally blues and jazz required some effort on the part of Caucasians, and there were artists, Caucasian artists, who acknowledged and expressed this forthrightly, like Vic Beiderbecke, who's from Illinois,
mm-hmm.
Dave Brubeck. All of these individuals acknowledged that they were copying and playing a music that was originated by African Americans. And that they had to listen and learn and play along with African Americans in order to be able to play the music.
Right. When they feel it.
Cool jazz,
right.
Smooth jazz is an oxymoron because if it's not smooth, it's not jazz.
Jazz. It's not jazz.
Smooth jazz is an indication that this is Caucasian influence. Mm-hmm. Not that there's anything wrong with it. They have a right to play the music too. Mm-hmm. But also electronic, and I don't have a problem with all electronic. Herbie Hancock has mastered different synthesizers, and Stevie Wonder has mastered certain synthesizers. But they tend, when you talk about smooth jazz, what most people are expressing who just listen to smooth jazz, I don't have a lot of patience.
Yeah.
Because to listen to jazz music, it's classical music, and it requires patience.
Well, that's
you listen because every artist is saying something.
Yeah.
If you get the title of the song, and you listen to the artist, and each one is making a contribution and expression that is unique and of them, and they have a vocabulary is their own. I'm sorry, Oshie, go ahead.
No, now what you're going to say about Ron Kushner, the dark side, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, Ron Kushner.
I remember Ron Kushner.
Yeah, and he would say in his late night radio broadcast of jazz, this is America's classical music.
Yeah,
this is America's classical
music. And he started out on, he later on, I think he switched to UWM.
Yeah.
But he started out at WFMR, which was a classical music station, until 12 o'clock at night.
That's right, Ron Kushner
would come on. Yep. And man, I got some of my favorite jazz pieces back in the day from listening to Ron Kushner in Milwaukee and listening to this guy who came on around the same time at night. Out of Rochester, New York.
Mm.
It was called Bill Itis Against the Night.
Mm.
And you would hear a song, because back then, different from now, we got most of our music from the radio.
Yes.
So you would hear something on the radio, and you waited till the next day when the store opened so you could go and buy that record, 45, 33 and a third, long playing album.
Yeah, especially.
And man,
those 33 and a thirds. Yeah. That's what all the jazz music was coming from at that time. Not LPs, long playing. They was coming 33 and a thirds. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And if you were a fan, you not only anticipated, you know, getting the music, but the cover. The covers were artistic, very expressive. And then you go inside and read the liner notes.
Mm-hmm.
The history of the music, who's playing on it, how they came together. And one of my favorite players is this brother named Mtume, who talked about Miles Davis when he played with John Coltrane, Cannonball Adderley, Bill Evans. I can't remember the bass player's name, but he said Miles.
Ron Kushner, Ron Kushner. What you call on bass?
Not Ron Carter.
Ron Carter on bass.
His name will come to me in a minute.
Okay, Ron Carter on bass.
they didn't see the music until right before they got ready to record.
Mm.
He said Miles would have little slips of paper and he was hand one to train. This your part. And he said he liked that tension because it made them want to, to be great playing this music.
Right.
So yeah, the jazz history, I love the jazz history because it's so much of our history. The jazz history in America, the foundation of it is African American history.
That's right. That was funny part about Kim Burns' jazz piece. Remember those Caucasians at the beginning of the piece he talks about who tried to co-opt jazz and label it as their own?
You talking about Nick LaRocca who said that we didn't have anything, that it was an American invention.
That's
and
right.
We didn't have anything to do with it.
That's right.
And that was just, I mean, to hear somebody say that because that's like the lie you told about Timmons.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard this lie before.
Yeah.
You steal shit.
That's right.
Other people's shit. And
all
wear
the time.
It, like Paul Mooney said, don't let these people in your closet because they'll come out wearing your clothes.
Yep. Brothers and sisters, please. I know me and Muhammad, we could go on for days, but I'd like to get you in on this conversation. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. There's a number of you in the queue. Hit star twice. Hit star twice if you want to get in on this conversation, and I'll let you in. All right, Brother Ted Lusk. Brother Lusk, how you doing, man? Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Brother Ted Luss. Are you there?
Okay, I'm here.
Okay,
can
right
you hear
on.
Me now?
All right.
Assalamu alaikum, brother. Nice hearing you again.
Thank you.
You know, I was listening to you. I'm also at work, too, ping-ponging. But when you were mentioning some of the artists, especially Robert Glasper, what came to my mind was an artist, and I understand that he had transitioned due to an accident, was Art Porter, a saxophone player. But, of course, there were others, Esperanza Spalding and a couple others, just so many of them. Mike Phillips, who's also a saxophone player as well. So there's just loads of them. But I know it's still June and it's Music Month. Am I correct?
Yes, you're right.
Yeah, African American Music Month or Black Music Month, June.
Yes, I just want to put a little side note. And I don't know if you may have done this, Baba Oshi, but, June 16th was the International Day of the African Child. Did you make mention of that at all?
No, I didn't. No, I missed
that's right. June 16th is the International Day of the African Child, also known as the Day of the African Child, DAC. Mm-hmm. And that was regarding the issue that happened with the children that were killed in Soweto, South Africa.
I remember that.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I just wanted to kind of call your attention to that since we're still in the month of June, technically, and bring an awareness of that as well. But
right on.
Of course, being from New Orleans, Louisiana, myself.
All right.
You know, you mentioned song.
Right on, Brother Lusty. Nolens. I didn't know you was from Nolens, man.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And I want to be ready to get myself to go back in the next couple of months for the 20-year anniversary of Hurricane Katrina.
Yes.
And so it would be good to be absorbed once again back within the culture. And so, yeah, it's been interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for calling, brother, and safe travels.
Right on, brother.
Thank you so very much. Until next time.
Right on, brother.
Yes, sir.
Peace. Man, that's a good brother right there, man. I had opportunity. I've seen him a number of times now, but he has been calling. He used to call on Dr. William Rogers' program. Then he started calling on my program and providing me with a lot of good information.
You've met him when you've gone to New Orleans?
No, not in New Orleans. I met him in Montgomery, Alabama. And then he came here, and I met him in Columbus, Georgia for ASCAC's, a tribute to Dr. John Henry Clark. But I have the sister, Samara Joy, and I'm going to play her towards the end of our program so people will understand who I'm talking about and how she sounds. And this is she is, I would say, out of the mold of the jazz singers, as I already mentioned, the divine one, Sarah Vaughan, but many other, Ella Fitzgerald and so forth. This sister's beautiful, beautiful voice. Yes.
I also give it up to Jill Scott. And there's a sister that I discovered. One of my favorite jazz pieces is by Milt Jackson. Milt Jackson, mm-hmm. Freddie Hubbard,
yeah.
Herbie Hancock, Ron Carter, Billy Cobham.
Billy Cobham, the drummer.
Beautiful album. And it's called Sunflower.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the most beautiful pieces of music you ever want to hear. And I'm visiting my daughter Amira in Arlington, Virginia. And she puts on some music, and there's this sister singing the words to the song, What Are You Doing the Rest of Your Life? Which I think is one of the most romantic statements you can ask another person. What are you doing the rest of your life? Loved it as an instrumental with Milt Jackson and them, but this sister named Mesa Link,
okay.
The heck out of that song.
Beautiful.
And she's known in America, mostly known in England, but very, very beautiful young voice, Mesa Link. Look out for Mesa Link.
All right. Right on. There's a lot of them. Well, this one, she is unique based upon the awards that she has won and how she's played Samara Joy, and I'm going to introduce her to our listeners in a little while. Once again, brothers and sisters, the phone lines are open at 215-490-9832. That number, you're there. You're not hitting star twice. So apparently you just want to listen to me and Muhammad talk about our music. There are other genres of our music, you know, blues, rhythm and blues, bop, hip hop. You know, and you mentioned hip hop in the early on, particularly as it related to the Nation of Islam, you know, and what was happening with that genre of music. And although you and I both know the hip hop that was happening then was the conscious raising hip hop. And you could dance to it. Yeah. Yeah.
You could dance to it.
But then it became Hold on, Brother Muhammad. There was a organized effort to destroy hip hop the way it was and make it gangster rap with the degrading of our women, the glorification of drugs and so forth and selling drugs, and more deeply the glorification of killing one another. And you know, that's something that we got to understand. We in a world that has been manipulated and undermined by European Jews and Caucasians and Europeans. If we don't separate ourselves from that mindset, we're on a road to destruction. You know, just like European, that hip-hop.
European Jews, Caucasians, and this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you look at the direction that the music, when it became rap, and the people who, you know, I mean, he's gone mainstream, but remember the originally when he became a rap artist and was first known, the images and so forth that Snoop Dogg, which I've never been a fan of, and I'm still not. And I know he does some positive things around youth football, and he hangs out with Martha Stewart. But he brought an image. He would come out on the stage with sisters with dog chains around
right,
his neck.
Right, the necks, yeah.
With leashes.
Yeah.
And just the whole thing. The
imagery.
And it's very, very much like if you study the history of jazz, it sort of brought about the demise of the art form, or the lowering of the art form, you know, once it took hold. Mm-hmm. And you have to be very, very careful if you want to engage and discuss with young people, because rap is a religion.
Mm-hmm.
They are religious about their affinity for rap music, thug, gangster, murder, all of that.
And Muhammad, some of them individuals are 30, 40, damn near 50 years old, still with their pants around their ass. It's sad. It's ridiculous. You know, blunts, all of that is sad. You know, when you look at that, and I know there are other music genres that, you know, we didn't touch on, such as gospel, you know, and country western, the influence that we've had on country western. And of course, Caucasians don't want to acknowledge that, you know.
When we were in the South, that's what we listened to.
Yeah.
And they didn't call it that.
Right.
They didn't call it that, but we, you know, my family experienced slavery, post-slavery, Reconstruction, and Jim Crow in Tennessee. And so my mother used to, I love my dear mother, I love her. She, you know, may she have God's mercy. But she used to say that, because she used to, coming up from Tennessee and Missouri, she used to watch this show, I can't think of the name of it, but it was like a country western thing, and it would be a lady on there named Minnie Pearl.
Minnie Pearl. Oh, yeah.
Minnie Pearl was our cousin.
Yeah.
But we knew those figures from what currently is called country music. But if you lived in the South, that's what you heard on the radio.
Well, you see Minnie Pearl, if you
particularly
saw.
Particularly in Nashville. Yeah. What's the station in Nashville, Tennessee?
Gallatin, Tennessee. Randy's Resmark. Yeah.
WLAC Nashville. We listened to that from Milwaukee.
Yes. Yes. Because at night, because our radio stations went off when the sun went down. And so at night, you could pick those stations up on an AM radio. You could pick them up, and they would play more contemporary black music, you know. Yeah.
With a little country thrown in, but you're talking about artists like Chuck Berry, Brooke Benton. You know, those individuals continued the genre and mixing it with the blues and the country, what they call country western now. But, yeah, the music was being played by everyone, and you listen to everything, all artists on the radio. The more modern we became, the more segregated we became. Mm. Almost like a reverse kind of segregation, where the music started to be divided into different genres, and it is what we got today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, give us a call once again at 215-490-9832. We got a number of people, but they don't want to hit star twice to join the conversation, and I ain't going to go there with them. If you want to listen, please. I appreciate that, listening. Yeah, because me and Muhammad, you know, believe me, brother, I've been on the phone with this brother sometimes for hours.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
And conversations you don't pick up everywhere.
That's right.
Let me take a minute and pay homage to our brother who passed a few weeks ago, Gerald W. Jones. I met Gerald Jones.
Courier Communications.
When I was in the Nation of Islam when I was 22. And he had been in the Nation, had left, started the Milwaukee Courier newspaper, and he came to our FOI class one Saturday morning at 6 o'clock and watched us do close order drill. And then after the FOI class was over, me and him were talking. He said, "I'm getting ready to buy a radio station." And I didn't know it at the time, but he bought WNOV for $30,000.
Mm. Yeah. And when he did he buy it from WVON in Chicago? And that's why moved?
He bought it from some Caucasians here in Milwaukee.
Ah, okay.
And he became, WNOV became the sister station
to WVON,
which WVON stood for Voice of the Negro.
Right.
So Gerald just kept the same letters, and you know, WVON, WNOV, 860 AM,
because most of the radio personalities came from Chicago, you know, Bill Taylor, Kenner,
Jim Frazier,
yeah, Cecil Hale,
it was either Arthur Wood or. One was a father, one was a son.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the son, and I believe it was Arthur, who came to Milwaukee, was on WNOV, and then left and went to Houston. But definitely Gerald W. Jones was a pioneer.
Yes.
He was 85 when he passed. But he held on to his radio station when Clear Channel and other corporations were buying up radio stations around the country and changing the format. To where it went away from playing R&B, soul, jazz, catering to us more what you might call so-called mainstream.
Yeah.
But we have to give it up to Gerald Jones. I'm gonna describe Gerald Jones the way they describe Duke Ellington. He was an enigma wrapped in a riddle.
An enigma wrapped in a riddle. I like that.
There was nobody like Gerald Jones. He was his own man to the end. I know a lot of history being close to Gerald Jones. I saw it up close and personal, and it was always fascinating. Yeah. So kudos to Gerald Jones. Media magnet from Milwaukee. May God's mercy be on him.
Ashe. Yeah, yeah. Also, too, of course, and you would have to be under a rock or you didn't watch anything on your computer, especially you didn't go on Facebook not to see anything by our good brother Walter Scott, The Whispers.
Yeah.
Walter Scott, in fact, I remember me and you, man, way back in the day when Lady was out and all the other, you know, and the Whispers were just so hot, man. They were just so dynamic. They had five members, and then Marcus Hudson, he he passed away by cancer. And then they said, well, we're not going to have, you know, any other members. We'll just deal with the four of us. So the brother, Lavelle and brother from the choreographer, Nicholas. Yeah, brother Nicholas, the brother with the beard. He was a choreographer. And, of course, the
yeah,
Scott
you know,
brothers.
You know, Gary Hutchins' father, my friend Gary Hutchins' father, Cecil Hutchins and Carl G,
mm-hmm.
had opened up a club called The Turning Point.
The Turning Point. That's what I'm talking
about. That's where I first saw yes. The Whisper.
Right. Oh, that's where I first saw Dramatics. You know, Dramatics is my favorite group. Then The Whispers. I love groups. You know, of course, we all love The Temptations. We all love yeah. The Impressions and so forth back in the 60s. But these groups were emerging in the late 60s into the 70s and dominated. That's when I first saw The Dramatics. Man, I fell in love. I mean, when you have a club like that, it's an intimate setting. You're right there.
Yeah.
You're right there, man. There ain't no obstructions. There ain't no – you're right there. And it was just fantastic, man. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, Oshie, I want to throw out Motown, who Berry Gordy had a brand. And I'm going to invoke this. If you study the Islamic sciences, invariably you're going to come in contact because of the language. Arabic poetry is a part of Islamic science.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There are no greater poets in my lifetime than William Smokey Robinson, Tom Bell from Philadelphia International,
and
Kenny Gamble,
Leon Huff.
Leon Huff. Those two, and that before there was any such thing of no, you know, there were brands, but they had a brand that was unique and of its own. So Motown had its style, Philadelphia International had its style, Saks had its style,
mm-hmm.
And those were those companies. I forgive me if I'm leaving anybody else out, but yeah, those individuals deserve some credit because they it was through their music that a lot of you can go. There's a saying, you can go and listen to some music, and if you go back, you can see what was going on at that time.
Yep.
So who could ever forget the impact? And Berry Gordy, guarding his brand, did not want Marvin Gaye to put out what's going on.
He sure didn't, because it's too
he
political.
He thought it was controversial.
Yeah, too political.
It was political, and he didn't want to go there. And
it
man,
was, it was the best thing could happen.
Album.
It was the best thing that
what
could
an
happen.
Album.
Yes.
Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on?
Well, you know, he
just wanted
us. Yeah, well, you know, Berry Gordy just wanted us to keep us dancing in the streets, you know.
Yes.
You know, Marvin Gaye was thought provoking.
Yeah, absolutely. Talking about ecology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you listen to that in TED Talk. Ecology, war, mm-hmm. which, you know, it's different nowadays, but there's, you know, there's war raging in the world, and people are. You know, whether you're talking about on the African continent or wherever, you know, there's wars going on and people's lives are being diminished
mm-hmm.
In a lot of cases, but due to greed and, mm-hmm. and the system and the footprint that was left there after colonization, they're still trying to overcome that that mountain
yeah.
that was dropped on the continent from Europe.
Well, I tell you, there's rays of hope with the Sahel, with Burkina Faso, particularly with Ibrahim Traoré, Mali and Niger, Ghana is coming along, Senegal is coming along. A setback, as far as I'm concerned, is Democratic Republic of Congo and Rwanda cutting a deal with the United States. I'm so pissed about that. I am very upset by that, but you know.
Well, the man, without calling his name, I don't want to give any call, but man, he's just he's like a political Charlie Parker. You know, there's the episode of the Ken Burns Jazz series, I believe it's episode 8, is pretty much predicated about the life of Charlie Parker, and the title of it is Dedicated to Chaos.
Mm.
And this dude is dedicated to chaos.
He is.
And he's interested in make our lives, African Americans, chaotic, as well as Africa.
Yes.
He could have been
saying.
More explicit when he referred to Africa as one of the places he called shithole country.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You calling something
shit? Yeah, really.
You are a shithole country.
Man. This cat, I mean, his whole, well, I don't want to get off into his ass, his flat, stanking ass. I don't want to get off him because he angers me so deeply, man. He does cause a real visceral effect on me because, I've never liked him, Muhammad. I don't know if I saw him on Shally Jaffe Raphael, if I saw his ass on Phil Donahue. I don't know where the hell I saw him, but when I first saw him, his arrogance and his demeanor just make me wonder, just, you know, punch him in the face.
I first came to know who he was due to the travesty of
the Central Park Five. The Central Park Five.
That's when I became aware of who he was.
So that was.
He asked for the death penalty.
Even when they were exonerated.
Those young men.
Shit. Yeah.
And even after they were exonerated, he would not acknowledge.
Exactly. He put out a full-page ad for their execution.
That's the quicksand that he is. We both trying to pivot away from him at the end of coming right there. So anyway, there's a message in our music, and I think that is the thing that overall, in terms of my regard for our music, despite whatever pitfalls the artist or the genre may present to us at certain aspects in time, but clearly, you know, there's a message that needs to be get out to our people, and sometimes the best conveyor of that is music.
Mm-hmm.
Simple as that. If you disagree, speak your piece.
Yeah. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. And there's a number of you in the queue. Like I said, if you don't want to hit that star twice and engage in conversation, that's cool. You just want to listen, that's cool. Believe me, it is. Yeah, because I'm talking today with my good brother, Muhammad Abdullah, and we're talking about our music, you know, all the facets of our music. You know, did you get a chance to see Sinners?
To see who?
Sinners.
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay, yeah.
You texted me the day you was going to watch it, so what were your thoughts about it, and how was the music?
Well, I'm telling you, it's deep, and you got to watch it a few times. Because it's so much symbolism within within the music, within the movie, and many of them have been documented about this, that, or the other, man. But it's deep, you know. In fact, a buddy guy is shown at the end of the movie, having been the young man who played guitar, you know, in the speakeasy that they developed in the juke joint that they developed and so forth. And
where is the setting?
The setting is Mississippi. The setting is Mississippi,
really?
And it's the 30s. It's the 30s, almost the 40s, yes. The 30s. And
actually, Oshi, I have watched some pieces of it because the brother, Michael B. Jordan?
Yes. Who plays the twin?
He plays himself. He
right.
Plays, he has like a twin.
He has a twin.
And so I did see some clips of it, but I need to sit down and watch it from
Yeah. Oh, don't. Oh, no doubt, man. No doubt. In fact, when you do, man, let me know so we can have a discussion.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because there's so much. There's so much symbolism, and there's so many things that happen within that movie. You know, a lot of times people go to movies. And they don't want to deal with the symbolism. They just want to be entertained, you know.
Yeah.
But there are some movies.
But what is the saying? Art imitates life and vice versa.
Yeah.
So clearly, I collect movies, books, and film. I mean, music, film, and books.
Yeah, you have an extensive collection, too, I might add.
I use them in my teaching.
Yeah.
You know, I very often... It's one of the easiest ways for me to convey something, a message to someone, is to relate it to a movie that I've seen or that people have seen. And in fact, my friend in Indianapolis, he calls me the Muhajith of film. Because whenever we have a conversation, You know, I was like, have you ever seen this movie, baby? And so, yeah, that's kind of how I feel. And I do the same thing with music.
Yes.
I mean, there's some music, jazz pieces, R&B pieces that clearly express what you're feeling at a particular place in time.
Yeah.
And so that's the benefit for me. And as I said, you know, the statement, song is the wind chime of memory. You know, sometimes those songs are joyful, and sometimes they're sad. Mm-hmm. And visiting them, you know, it's good to be able to look back on that and see where you come since that time. So I find that benefit in it as well.
Right. Right. So I'm trying to figure out here. No, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that.
So you said you were going to play something by that sister?
Yeah.
What is her name?
Samara Joy.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if I've ever heard or seen her before.
You probably heard her. She's, I think she's won Grammy Awards the last couple of years. Yeah. She's a Grammy Award winner.
I really have not watched the Grammys in a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of swung heavily towards other genres and rap.
Yeah.
Seems to dominate a lot of the Grammys. I mean, in some cases, you know, and no disrespect to our young people, like, for example, they refer to one of my nieces referred to Chris Rock as the king of R&B. I thought, really?
Rock. No, that's...
Chris Brown.
Chris Brown, because Chris Brown. Whitney Houston did that when she... I hate to remember that because it's a terrible memory. She looked so terrible, man. And her mama was behind her. Her mama was just... I could see the anguish in her mama's face, you know. In fact, she couldn't sing. She kept asking the audience to sing with me. You know, she threw the microphone out there. And refer to.
Yeah, I remember seeing that. She looked like an African-American olive oil.
Yeah. And you know how beautiful.
Her knee, her kneecaps was sticking out. In
she was a beautiful woman, man.
Said Bobby Brown was looking at her like he was a parole officer.
So, yeah. But let me play this before I'm going to give you a last word. This is, brothers and sisters, is Samara Joy. And, with the song, guess who I saw today? A Nancy Wilson cut. Guess who I saw today?
Beautiful song.
Yes, it is.
That's what your sister's singing?
Yes. Listen up.
Man, yeah, that's one of my favorite tunes by Nancy Wilson.
Okay, let me see.
Teenagers are building businesses with AI.
Let me get this stuff out together here. I'm trying to do something on my phone. Mm-hmm. Okay, here we go, family.
While the only AI you know is ChatGPT, tomorrow morning we're starting the 28-day AI challenge for beginners over 50.
Okay,
just
you're so late getting home from the office. Did you miss your train? Were you caught in the rain? No, don't bother to explain. Can I fix you a quick martini? As a matter of fact, I'll have one with you, for to tell you the truth, I've had quite a day to... Guess who I saw today? Shop around for something new. I thought I'd stop grab a bite when I was through. I looked around for some place new. Then it occurred to me where I had parked the car. There was a most attractive French cafe and bar. It really wasn't very far. The waiter showed me to a dark, secluded corner, and as my eyes became accustomed to the gloom, I saw two people at the bar who were so much in love that even I could spot it clear across the room. Guess who I saw today, my dear? I'd never been so shocked before. I headed blindly through the door. They didn't see me passing through. Guess who I saw today? Guess who I saw today? Guess who I saw today? I saw.
Samara Joy, the lovely sound of Samara. That's beautiful, isn't it? Man, I tell you. Yeah, Samara Joy, my brother. How'd you like that?
Oh, that's beautiful, man. That's beautiful. She got the chops.
Oh,
no
man.
She sounds
like the sisters did back in the day. Some Sarah Vaughan. Beautiful voice. Beautiful voice of Samara Joy. Listen, man, we're at that top of the hour. Just want you to close it out, Brother Muhammad. I appreciate you once again, as always.
Yes, sir. Likewise, Oshi.
Yeah.
Brother.
And I hope the listening audience enjoyed.
Can I close with this, Oshi?
Sure.
Music is a journey, and the goal is to return home to base unless you're a shooting star, a comet, or an idol. And as we know, stars burn out, comets crash, and idols get broken. Peace and blessings, y'all.
Ashe. Peace and blessings, family. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people has all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahadie, a Bibi Fahadie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Hope to see you on Wednesday. Peace, family.